हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। So then, from reading from Mahabharata, then we're on the chapter to Bhadrika Ashrama. So then, this is chapter 26. So now Lomas Rishi has come from the heavenly planets, instructed by Indra to take them on pilgrimage, and that way increase their piety, and because with greater piety comes greater position and authority and power. And so as kings, these are very important things. So just before they're leaving, then Yudhishthira Maharaj made the point that how is it that they're pious, Pandavas, but they're in the forest and suffering, and Duryodhana is not pious, but he's in the city and enjoying. So then Lomasha, then he makes this point. O son of Kunti, you should never grieve for such things. A man may be seen to prosper in sin, obtain good fruits, or vanquish his enemies. But he is finally destroyed to the root, not just he has a setback. He's destroyed down to the root, means there's nothing left. Well, you see, the Pandavas is just a setback, because then they'll flourish again. But you see, with Duryodhana, he'll be destroyed and there'll be nothing left. There'll be that, just that dynasty will be finished. I've seen many Daityas and Danavas prosper by sin, but I have also seen them overtaken by utter destruction. O ruler of the earth, I saw all this in the Satyuga especially. Lomasa narrated how during Satyuga, the first in the cycle of the four ages, the Asuras proudly refused to perform religious acts, while the Devas practiced virtue and engaged in sacrifice. At first, the Asuras, seeking only wealth, became powerful and wealthy, but it did not last. From the possession of ill-gotten wealth, there arose every kind of evil propensity, and from that arose shamelessness. All good behavior disappeared, and for want of good conduct and virtue, the Asuras could no longer express forgiveness or morality. They lost in prosperity because the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, left the Asuras and sought out the celestials, while the goddess of adversity, Alakshmi, sought out the Asuras. When afflicted by adversity, the Asuras became angry and became possessed by Kali, the god of quarrel and destruction, who influenced them towards more and more sin. Destitute of all sacrifice and religious ritual, they soon met with complete ruination. So, someone is behaving piously, then everything gradually will get established, because things in the mode of goodness, they develop slowly. Things in the mode of passion, because of lack of tolerance and things, and that great anxiety, they seem to come about quickly, but they also quickly disappear. While the mode of goodness that comes up, that's sustainable. So when they get all these, when without performing pious activities, they're getting all their wealth, then naturally, then all kinds of evil, qualities come up. Because if you think I've gotten this just because I wanted it and I endeavored for it, then the pride and all kinds of other things, envy, attachment, all these naturally come up. And then when those come up, then there will be shamelessness. You'll feel that, no, whatever I want to do, that's the supreme. Because you saw, I worked, I got. So therefore, I don't need to follow anything good. I don't have to care for anybody else. I on my own can do everything. And then from that, then naturally, then everything will, then there won't be, they can't forgive anybody because it's all about themselves. They don't know what's moral and not moral, and so that way they'll just be destroyed. Lakshmi will go away, Alakshmi will come. On the other hand, the virtuous Devatas visited holy places and engaged in sacrifice, charity, and asceticism. Thus, the prosperity they attained was lasting. Right? Means you can, by not doing pious things, make the mechanical effort and get facility. But because it's ill begotten, means because everything in human life is supposed to be gained by sacrifice, you know, then it will be lost. You know, just like the thief may steal some money, but it won't last. You know, because bad qualities come up, and so they get more greedy, they spend it, they fight over it, they, you know, all these things. They can't tell the difference between right and wrong. And one day they'll do something wrong. I think they're so powerful. Therefore, O best of men, you too will gain good fortune by visiting the Tirthas and by your ascetic life in the forest. Right? 12 years in the forest, practicing asceticism, going to the holy places and hearing from the Brahmins and doing all these nice things. Then their piety will be so great, like that. And then, you know, and Duryodhana, that same 12 years, he's just living on sin. So everything will be finished. There's nothing to produce more. Dhritarashtra's sons, addicted to sin, will certainly be destroyed exactly as the Asuras were destroyed. Reassured by Lomasa's words, Yudhishthira and his brothers, along with Draupadi, followed the Rishi through the forest. Behind them walked their attendants, headed by Indrasena, the brother's longtime intimate servant who had gone with them into the forest. The Brahmins followed the servants, and the party formed a long line through the undergrowth. Right, because the Kshatriyas went in the front here. Normally you would have Brahmins going in the front, and it's a formal thing and all this, but because they're going through and they may meet Rakshasas and dangers, then they go in the front. And that. And so then when it's clear, then the Brahmins and everybody. Gradually, they visited the many sacred tirthas and bathed in numerous holy rivers and lakes. They offered oblations to their ancestors and heard spiritual instructions from the ascetics living at the sacred sites. The brothers also heard the fascinating accounts of kings and rishis of former ages associated with all the holy places. When they reached the Himalayas, Lomasa warned the party to proceed with caution. There is Mount Meru and the peaks of Kailash, Gandamandana, Trishringa and Makaragiri, he said, pointing ahead to the splendid mountain rising into the clouds. Here reside thousands of invisible celestial beings. The Kimpurushas, Yakshas, Kinaras, Suparnas, Nagas, Rakshasas, all swift as the wind and as powerful as 1,000 mighty elephants, move about. All these people that are as thousands. Okay, all as swift and powerful as thousands of mighty elephants move about on these mountain ranges. Sinful men cannot gain access here, for they will be destroyed by the celestials. See now, when they're pointing out when they're pointing out the Meru there, now they're getting up to the middle of Jambudvipa. So that means they're going beyond what we are able to see and going to the next realms. And it's because on Jambudvipa you have nine different sections. And so we're on the Bharatavarsha section. And so here are all the Kimpurushas, that's Kimpurusha Varsha, and these that are all just right next to Meru, just above us and around Meru. As Lomasa prayed to the gods for protection, Yudhishthira said to Bhima, "Carefully guard Draupadi, dear brother. She always seeks and deserves your protection when she is afraid. We shall now proceed into these sacred mountains," right? Because if you have a trouble, you go to the one who's the biggest and the strongest, right? Because Bhima is bigger than everybody else. Like we saw before, when they were going after the fire at Varanavata, they were going through the forest. So Kunti Devi was on his neck, and then he had the other two brothers sitting on his shoulders. And then he had another two that he was holding like this. So how wide were his shoulders that two brothers can sit there and his mother, you know, on the neck. And then he'll hold two brothers like this on his waist, you know, like you hold children, you know, you sit there on the waist. And then he runs. So how big is he, right? Big and strong. So naturally, if there's something immediately comes up, she'll just take shelter of Bhima. Like that. We shall now proceed into these sacred mountains. By virtue of our asceticism and the pious merits we have earned through sacrifice, we may all be allowed to approach this holy region. Right? Because they're so pious and all that, they can go. Now, of course, here they're playing the part of ordinary, you know, kshatriyas and kings. But these are all pure devotees, so they have the piety beyond Lord Brahma. So they could go to any place in the universe. Like you see Arjuna, just the chariot comes and he can go to heaven. There's no problem. It's not that he has to do anything, and it's not that he's like, oh, wow, this and wow, that. It's like, this is okay, it's nice, it's done nicely. He's invited, he sits on Indra's throne, he's not sitting there going, ooh, like that. He's comfortably sitting there like that. And so just their piety as devotees is the greatest. But, you know, playing the position that they're playing, so they're going to say that they have done, they've given so much in charity, they've done so much sacrifice, like that. Loma said, told the brothers that they would meet Arjuna in the mountains as he descended from heaven onto the summit of the Gundamandana mountain. They decided to go there and await Arjuna's arrival. Right? So Gundamandana, I think from there he went up to the heavenly planets, and from there he'll come down. The path to the mountain peak, however, was fraught with danger. Lomasha asked Yudhishthira to tell his servants and most of the Brahmins to stay back. Bhima then placed Draupadi on his shoulders, and the party, with only a few Brahmins, made their way into the Himalaya range along the craggy mountain pass. So that means the servants and most Brahmins who, you know, they didn't have that physical, you know, just that roughness would be there, or maybe the piety they had wasn't as great as others and like that. It means they're all Brahmins, they're all highly qualified, they've gone this far, but to go farther. Because the main thing, it was very difficult and dangerous, you know, just like that. The terrain was rugged and the climb arduous, right? So it's not just a nice, pleasant little tourist path, you know, to be going up through, very, very difficult. At last they came to the Alakananda River, said to descend to earth from the heavens. They worshipped the holy river and bathed in its crystal clear waters. The brothers looked around at the brilliant scenery that surrounded them on the high mountain plateau. It seemed as if they had arrived on a heavenly planet. Blossoming trees of every color gave off celestial fragrances. The ground was carpeted with soft bluish grass and expanses of wild flowers. It means the grass is so green, it almost has that bluish tinge to it, because green is blue and yellow. So you see is that, let's say, grass is not so healthy, it goes more towards the yellow, right? The blue is less. But this means it's just really, really like that. So it goes towards that bluish. The green is almost blue, like that. You know. The ground is carpeted with soft bluish grasses and expansions of wild flowers. Transparent lakes filled with blue lotuses and crowded with swans and chakravartas lay amid the groves of fruit trees. Okay, so the blue lotuses only grow in really, really auspicious places like that. The musical sounds of cuckoos, peacocks, and countless other birds filled the air. Lobasha told the Pandavas that Indra came daily to this region to perform his rituals and prayers. The brothers saw in the distance what appeared to be a number of massive white mountains, but Lomasha told them that it was the bones of Naraka. The story, a mighty asura whom Vishnu had slain in a past age. The Rishi related the story as they were traveling onward towards Gundamandana. As they approached the mountain, the path became increasingly difficult, leaving behind the heavenly terrain. Yeah. So Naraka is the one who Narakasura, then he had that benediction of 100 kavachas. You know, so that if one was removed, the next one would be there. And so he was harassing the demigods and no one could defeat him. So then Naranarayan Rishi came, because he had a benediction. He could only be killed by someone who is only by someone who's in deep meditation. Because if someone's in deep meditation, they were not going to be fighting, right? So it's like Hiranyakashipu tried to be tricky with his boons with Brahma. You know, not in the day, not in the night, not inside, not outside. You know, not in the air, the land, or the water. You know, not by any weapon, not by any, you know, like this. But the Lord gets around all those things. So the same way as Naranarayan Rishi, because it doesn't say Naranarayan Rishis. It's not plural, it's singular. They're one Rishi, just two aspects, two features. And so then Nara then is Arjuna, and Narayana is Krishna. And so then Arjuna sat in deep meditation. You know, he just sat down and meditated on Krishna. And then Narayana, then he fought with him, and like this, he knocked off all his kavachas until there was only one left. And when that one was left, then he killed him without taking off the kavacha. So then, next life, he was born as Karna, already with that kavacha. like that. So that's why, you know, that you know, Krishna and others who know, they're not too worried about it. You know, because I mean, he killed, like he said, they think they're massive white mountains. That's just the bones of Narakasura. Yeah. So in that thing, and here Karna is even a smaller manifestation. So there's no problem. He is formidable, but still, Arjuna will win. As they approached the mountain, the path became increasingly difficult. Leaving behind the heavenly terrain, they moved slowly along now snowbound and rocky paths. Suddenly, a violent wind blew up, filling the air with dust and dried leaves. Blinding the Pandavas, Bhima held on to Draupadi, who became terror-stricken as she heard great trees crashing to the ground all around them. It felt as if the mountain itself were being torn asunder by some celestial power. Each of them sought whatever shelter they could find beneath rocks and trees. When the dust storm subsided, rain fell in torrents. Rivulets and streams began to flow everywhere, covered in froth and mud. As the rain continued, the streams grew louder and wider and began to carry away trees and bushes. The sky was thick with black clouds, growing, throwing out quick lightning. That, despite the ferocity of the storm, seemed to play with grace upon the mountainside. Gradually the storm abated and the sky cleared. The sun shone brightly, and steam began to rise from the ground, right? Because the ground was wet from the storm, and now so it was cold, and now the sun comes, it gets hot, so that little steam comes up. The travelers emerged from their hiding places and reunited, continued towards Gandamandana. But Draupadi was exhausted and felt she could not go any further. Overwhelmed, she fainted and fell to the ground like a plantain tree uprooted by the wind. Nakula rushed forward and caught her as she fell and laid her gently on the deerskin Sahadev spread out. Yudhishthira said, "How can this beautiful lady, accustomed to every luxury, sleep now on the ground? Her delicate hands and feet have turned blue with cold, and she lies there exhausted. Alas, this is all my doing. Addicted to dice, I have acted foolishly and brought great suffering on those I love. King Drupad bestowed this princess upon us in the hope that she would be happy. Now she lays prostrate on the ground in this fearful wilderness." Lomasa and Domya recited mantras capable of destroying all ills. Nakula gently fanned Draupadi while Sahadev massaged her feet. As she slowly regained consciousness, Yudhishthira consoled her. She looked at Bhima. "How shall we carry on, O Almighty One? Many rugged and icy paths lie ahead. I do not think that Draupadi will be able to tolerate the journey." Bhima suggested, Bhima suggested that they summon Ghatotkacha. "My son is powerful and can carry us through the skies," right? Because he's a Rakshasa, right? Means he's his son as a human, but he's a human who's as strong as 10,000 elephants. And then his mother is a full-on Rakshasa. And we see is not just a small Rakshasa, you know, means of these, you know, Hidimba, Baka, these are, you know, and who is that? Kimira. These are really well-known big Rakshasas. And so then he's saying, "Oh, he's strong enough, he could carry us all." "O king, simply order me and I shall bring him here by thought alone." Yudhishthira agreed and Bhima sat down and meditated upon his son. As soon as he was remembered, Ghatotkacha appeared before Bhima and stood with folded palms, right? Because that was the thing, is that just like Vyasadeva, he told, "If you think of me, then I'll come." So in the same way, Ghatotkacha was the same. You think of him, he'll be there. Because they're mystical. You know, the Rakshasas are very powerful, so they can do all these things. He bowed at his father's feet and saluted the other Pandavas reverently. Right, because his father, his uncles, yes. After affectionate welcome, he said, "O sinless ones, my father has summoned me, and I am ready to do your bidding. Please command me." Okay, so we'll see how they proceed on their journey. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.